Hello, this is Chris Whippo. I will be reading to you from the Champaign-Urbana News Gazette from Saturday, August 9th through Monday, August 11th. Going to start out with this was in Sunday's edition about Representative Rodney Davis. Rodney Davis will take your questions now. Is the title, and the subtitle is News Gazette Media Exclusive Politics at Parkland. And now, the moment certain CU Democrats have all been waiting for, a chance to be in the same room when U.S. Representative Rodney Davis answers your question. A week from Monday, on August 19th, the Republican congressman will hold his second term, his second open government night in as many months since this time in Champaign. Due to join him on stage at Parkland's Harold and Jean Minor Theater for the 6 p.m. event, State Representative Brad Halbrook, who is a Republican from Shelbyville, and moderator Scott Beatty of News Gazette Media's WDWS 1400 AM. Admission is free and seating is first come, first serve. The doors will open at 5 o'clock. The format will mirror that of Davis's first audience Q&A event held July 29th at Decatur's Richland Community College. Over that 90-minute program, Davis and State Rep. Dan Calkins took turns answering 22 questions submitted in writing by those in a crowd of around 250. Topics range from the tone of President Donald Trump's tweets to gun control and soybean tariffs. Under this format, the moderator chooses the questions. Neither Davis nor his representatives will see them or have a hand in selecting them before they're asked, officials said. Davis will run for a fifth two-year term in Congress next year. It's likely to be a rematch of the 2018 election, with Democrat Betsy Dirksen Londrigan announcing she'll run again for the 13th district seat. And that article was written by Jeff Alessio, D'Alessio. The next article is written by Tom Kasich of the News Gazette, and the title is Campaign Donors in CU Still Bagging Bernie. This is from Sunday's paper, August 11th. Bernie Sanders is still the favorite among presidential campaign donors in Champaign-Urbana, according to the website Political Moneyline. The Vermont senator raised nearly $8,000 from 14 donors in Champaign-Urbana through June 30th, more than three times as much as the second-place aspirant, Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's raised $2,440 locally from seven donors. In third place is South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg with $1,993 from eight donors. Further down the list are the current national polling leaders for both parties. President Donald Trump has raised just $673 in Champaign-Urbana in this election cycle, and former Vice President Joe Biden has brought in a mere $40. Other candidates receiving contributions from Champaign-Urbana residents include Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, $275, former U.S. Representative Beto O'Rourke of Texas, $260, California Senator Kamala Harris, $255, former HUD Secretary Julian Castro, $229, author Marianne Williamson, $213, and U.S. Representative Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii, $200. Although Trump had only four donors in Champaign-Urbana, an independent pro-Trump group, the Committee to Defend the President, raised another $150. The Republican National Committee collected $1,005. The National Republican Senate Committee raised $991, and the National Republican Congressional Committee raised $1,365. The Democrat National Committee raised $4,705 in the community. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee raised $4,584, and the Democratic National Campaign Committee raised $942. The presidential fundraising seems to be in line with the presidential primary results in Champaign County in 2016, when Sanders got 66.4% of the vote here to Hillary Clinton's 33.2%, and Trump finished second in the GOP primary with 29% to Senator Ted Cruz's 37%. Trump lost Champaign County to Clinton in the general election 54.7% to 36.4%. Much of the local presidential candidate fundraising was of small amounts, sometimes as little as $1 or $5, through Act Blue, the online fundraising platform that receives and distributes donations for Democratic candidates. Only a couple of donors came close to the maximum allowable contributions. Alan Axelrod of Urbana and Michelle McKinney of Decatur each contributed $2,700 to Sanders. Presidential fundraising was skimpy in most other area communities. There were just three contributors in Danville who gave a total of $400 to Trump and $127 to Sanders. In Mahomet, one contributor gave $400 to Warren. In Savoy, Harris raised $50 and Trump got $35. In Monticello, three Democrats got all the money, $1,000 to Warren, $116 to Sanders, and $108 to Buttigieg. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker got $575 in Charleston, where Warren also got $250, and Buttigieg collected $150. In Mattoon, Trump received donations totaling $512. Trump's strongest area county was Macon, where he raised $2,202 from 11 donors. Still, he was outraised there by Sanders, who got a total of $3,050 from two donors. Trump won Macon County in 2016 with 56.6% to Clinton's 38.5%, nearly the opposite of Champaign County. Nationally, according to the New York Times, five candidates, Sanders, Buttigieg, Warren, Harris, and Biden, stand out from among the Democratic candidates. Sanders has raised $36.2 million in the 2020 election cycle, while Buttigieg has received $32.3 million, Warren $25.2 million, Harris $23.8 million, and Biden $22 million. Sanders has about 746,000 individual donors, compared with 421,000 for Warren, 390,000 for Buttigieg, 277,000 for Harris, and 256,000 for Biden. And that's the end of that article. Okay, I'm going to start going chronologically backwards with the obituaries because sometimes there's more information in the later editions. So this is from Monday, August 12th. The first one is Don Chenoweth of Champaign. Don Wilson Chenoweth of Champaign died Monday, August 5th, 2019. Per his wishes, his body was donated to medical science. Don will be remembered in memorial service at the regularly scheduled meeting for worship at 10:30 a.m. August 18, 2019 at the UC Friends Meeting House at 1904 Main Street in Urbana. Friends of Don and Roma are welcome to attend. Condolences may be offered online at www.owensfuneralhome.sbc/global.net. The next is Dorothy Hanna from Clinton. Dorothy J. Hanna, age 76, of Mahomet, passed away at 10:21 a.m. on Friday, August 9, 2019, at Clark Lindsay Village in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 9 a.m. Wednesday, August 14th, 2019, at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with the Reverend Mike Taylor officiating. Burial will follow at Mausoleum Park Cemetery, Clinton. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 13th, at the funeral home. The next is Jose Hernandez, age 67, of Garrett. He died at 8:22 p.m. on Wednesday, August 7th, 2019, at his residence. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. today, that's Monday, August 12th, at Edward's Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. The next one is Geraldine Price from Farmer City. Geraldine Ruth Price, age 82, formerly of Mahomet, passed away on Friday, August 9th, 2019, at Farmer City Rehab Center. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to noon on Tuesday, August 13th, at Blair Owens Funeral Home, 102 East Dunbar Street in Mahomet. Funeral services will immediately follow at noon at the funeral home, with the Reverend Dave Ashby officiating. Her final resting place will be in the Riverside Cemetery in Mahomet. These are in Sunday's August 11th edition of the News Gazette, continuing with the obituaries. Renata Bishop from Champaign. Renata Rennie Bishop, 78, of Champaign, died at 7:57 p.m. Wednesday, August 7th, 2019, at Generations at Lincoln, in Lincoln. Visitation will be from 1 to 3 p.m. Friday, August 16th, at Morgan Memorial Home, 1304 Regency Drive West in Savoy. The next one is Terry Christensen, that's Christensen, in Savoy. Terry Chico Dennis Christensen, age 68, of the Villages in Florida, formerly of Savoy, passed away Wednesday, July 3rd, 2019. He was born February 25th, 1951, in Arlington, Minnesota. He was preceded in death by his parents, Charles and Lois Miller Christensen. Let's see. And there's no more information about a funeral service or burial. The next is John Dean, Dean, in Urbana. John Dean, age 78, of Urbana, died at 3:25 p.m. on Tuesday, August 6th, at University Rehabilitation Center in Urbana. Private family burial was held at Willowbrook Cemetery in Urbana. Blurton Funeral Home in Hoopston, 400 North Vermilion Street in Potomac, is in charge of the arrangements. The next is Margaret Griswold, that's Griswold, in Claytonville. Margaret Maggie Griswold, age 70, of Claytonville, passed away on Thursday, August 8th, 2019, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, August 16th, 2019, at the Cisna Park United Methodist Church. The Reverend Molly Spence Hawk will officiate. Visitation will be 2 hours prior to the funeral service at church, from 9 to 11 a.m. Next is Eloise Heller from Champaign. Eloise Heller, age 95, of Champaign, went to be with the Lord our God on Friday, August 9th, 2019. Arrangements will be forthcoming and have been entrusted to Edward's Funeral Home in Arcola. The next is Leslie Lemons Sr. Leslie Lemons Sr., age 68, of Urbana, died on Wednesday, August 7th, 2019, at Carl Foundation Hospital. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Williams Memorial Services, 1203 North Market Street in Champaign. Next is Patrick Mitchell. Patrick Mitchell, 55, of Chicago, formerly of Champaign, died on Friday, August 9th, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Owens Funeral Home at 101 North Elm Street in Champaign. Isabel O'Neill in Champaign. Isabel Burgess O'Neill died peacefully in Champaign on Sunday, July 28th, 2019, at the age of 83. A memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Saturday, August 17th, with a visiting hour before the service from 10 to 11 a.m. at St. Matthew Catholic Church, 1303 Lincolnshire Drive in Champaign. Monsignor Deptula will officiate the service. A reception to celebrate Isabel's life will follow at Silver Creek Restaurant, 402 North Race Street, Urbana, until 3 p.m. Next is Emily Ray, RAY, from Broadlands. Emily Ray, age 33, of Broadlands, died on Thursday, August 8, 2019. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Williams Memorial Services, 1203 North Market Street, Champaign. Tobias Somers, this is from Brooklyn, New York. Tobias Somers, that's Somers, 65, of Brooklyn, New York, formerly of Monticello, died Friday, July 26th, 2019, at home. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Owens Funeral Home at 101 North Elm Street in Champaign. The last of these obituaries were published August 10th, on Saturday, August 10th, in the News Gazette. Ronald Bryant, BRYANT, of Urbana. Ronald Bryant, 58, of Urbana, died Tuesday, August 6, 2019, at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. In accordance with family wishes, Ronald will be cremated and his cremated remains will be buried at a graveside service at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, August 10th, at Ingram Cemetery in Whiteheath. Next is Freedonna Faulkner from Forsyth. Freedonna L. Faulkner, age 104, of Forsyth, formerly of Clinton, died at 1:44 p.m. Thursday on August 8th at Hickory Point Christian Village in Forsyth. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Tuesday at Calvert Funeral Home in Maroa. The Reverend Mary Alice Cunningham will officiate. Burial will be in Maroa Cemetery, in Maroa. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. on Tuesday at the funeral home. The next is Joel Foote, Foote, in Savoy. Joel Lindsley Foote, age 91, of Savoy, died at 9:50 a.m. Thursday, August 8, 2019, at Autumn Fields in Savoy. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Heath and Vaughn Funeral Home at 201 North Elm in Champaign. The next obituary is Harriet Rose, ROSE, in Mahomet. Harriet McLaughlin Rose, age 85, of Mahomet, formerly of Charleston, passed away Monday, August 5, 2019. She was born to Harry and Nina, maiden name Lindsay McLaughlin, on February 23, 1934, in Sparta. Okay, a celebration of life service will be held in Harriet's honor on Sunday, August 11th, that was held on Sunday, August 11th, 2019, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 710 North Neal Street in Champaign. And the visitation was held from 3:30 to 5 p.m. at the funeral home before the funeral. And that completes the obituaries for Saturday through Sunday in the News Gazette. Okay, this next article is in the Sunday, August 11th edition of the News Gazette, and it's about U University of Illinois parking. The main title is "Time Expired" with a question mark, and the subtitle is "Pilot Project May Doom Old Meters." And there's a picture of the new pay station that they have. This is by Julie Worth of the News Gazette. The humble parking meter may be on the way out at the University of Illinois. The 2,500 meters found in parking lots and streets across campus use 1990s technology that is no longer supported by the company that made them, according to Martin Paulins, director of campus parking. Faced with pricey replacement costs, the campus has decided to pilot new pay methods at two public parking areas, a busy lot with 250 meters at First Street and Peabody Drive in Champaign, just west of the Activities and Recreation Center and north of Memorial Stadium, and about 58 meters on the west side of the North Campus parking deck on University Avenue in Urbana. Drivers there can either pay with the mobile meter parking app that's already used by the U of I and the cities of Champaign and Urbana, or at new pay stations that accept coins or credit cards, Pollan said. The pay stations were installed last week and bags were placed on most of the old meters, explaining the change. Depending how the pilot project goes, more could follow around campus. Pollan said technology was the driving factor in the switch. The Duncan Parking Company, now known as Civic Smart, that's one word, no longer supports the 20-ish-year-old technology in the meters, which were installed in the North Parking Garage only 15 years ago. There's no hardware support at all for them anymore, Pollins said. The company no longer makes the parts, and they're run by an internal battery that needs to be replaced, he said. A new smart meter, that's in quotation marks, smart meter, costs from $400 to $1,000, he said, so upgrading all 250 meters at the First and Peabody lot would cost at least $100,000, he said. The solar-powered pay stations cost about $7,000 each, or $14,000 for the two at that lot, he said. Pollan said the new system is also more efficient. Parking enforcement officers have to check the old meters by hand to see if the violation light is blinking and then enter a license plate in the computer to find out whether the owner has paid. Now all that is tied to one big data cloud, he said. Meter checkers can drive through a parking lot and use a license plate recognition camera affixed to their vehicle that checks to see if the owner has paid via app or by pay station. They can drive the lot in a matter of minutes rather than hours, he said. Everything else we have is centralized except the old meters that are standalone, he said. In case you're wondering, the U of I parking department can't check remotely whether you've paid for parking. It still has to be done on site, Pollan said. Pollan said the parking department wanted to pilot the new system to get feedback and to see whether drivers like them. So far, he hasn't heard of any complaints. Some drivers parking near the ARC last week grumbled about the surcharge on the phone app or the lines that sometimes form at the pay stations, which could get worse once school starts. That might be a concern, said U of I senior Madison Kaufman, who works at the Activities and Recreation Center, but she said most students use the app already because it's so convenient. You know, students, we're always late. We can type in the information while we're running to class. And the new system is easier in some parts of campus where drivers have to type in the parking space number, Kaufman said. Pollan said data from the pilot project so far shows that 87% of the drivers are using the mobile app rather than the pay station. For those who don't want to use the app or dislike mobile meters transaction fees, Pollan's noted that the pay stations accept coins with credit or credit with no extra fees. And if lines become a problem, he said, more pay stations can be added. The parking department left two rows of working meters in the lot at First and Peabody as part of the slow phase-in to get people familiar with pay stations, he said. They will be removed over the next few weeks. The campus is already scouting where the next batch of pay stations might go, though no decisions will be made until the pilot project is assessed, he said. We would do it strategically on the high-end usage lots first and go from there, Pollan said. We have to do something. The only thing we can do right now is to cannibalize parts, which isn't very efficient. Pollan's acknowledged that mobile meter has had some network issues that interfere with the payment system, leaving motorists in a parking limbo. The U of I parking department isn't always notified right away either, he said. We first learn about it when our phones start lighting up from unhappy drivers, he said. It can be a half hour later that we'll get a notification that there is a problem. Drivers who wind up getting a parking ticket because of these outages can take it to the U of I Parking Department at 1201 West University Avenue in Urbana for review, he said. This next article is in Sunday's News Gazette, and it's about Arbor Rose in Monticello. The title is Monticello Activity Room Stirs Memories by Steve Hoffman of the News Gazette. When residents stroll into the new activity center at Arbor Rose Adult Daycare and Memory Care Home in Monticello, they enter a space that includes fake storefronts aimed at eliciting smiles and triggering memories. They walk by an ice cream shop which actually serves sweet treats on occasion, an art museum that displays their own creations, and a painted blue sky on the ceiling. It gives them the perception of being someplace other than in this hallway, said Patty Yao, one of the owners of the facility. The new activity area will be open to the public next weekend from 2 to 4 p.m. August 18th at Arbor Rose, located at 1809 South Irving Street. The 3,500-square-foot addition allows up to 22 residents to walk around the square and keep them inside to do it. With dementia, they want to walk. This gives them that chance and keeps them inside so they don't wander, said Connie Harrington, the activity marketing coordinator for Arbor Rose's five facilities. Intentions had always been to add a movie theater, five rooms, and an activity room to Arbor Rose, but the downtown feel, including paintings depicting Allerton Park and the Wabash Train Depot, created by Yao's daughter, Tennille Ulm, entered the equation as owners saw how much the renderings helped those with memory care issues at some of their facilities. We came up with this idea midstream. We started to do this to remind people and then saw them remembering things when they saw this train and thought it was a good thing, said Patty's husband and co-owner, Tim Yao. All of a sudden, we saw people start remembering all this stuff, he added. But they took it to a new level at Arbor Rose. They think the ability to walk completely around the activity area in a square of hallways, an indoor walking path, if you will, is unique to such facilities. It all comes down to stimulating the minds of memory care residents as much as possible. As they go out here and walk around, they think about different areas. We have pet shops, there's a candy shop, we have an art museum, and we will display work that they will do. One of the purposes of walking around is to see their work on display, said Mrs. Yao. The ownership group also includes Brent and Luz Zabka, Zabka, who take memory care so seriously, they not only went back to school to obtain advanced degrees in aging studies, but created an app to help people keep their minds sharp. Patty Yao would also like to get the community more involved at Arbor Rose. That's why there are mailboxes on the wall of one hallway. She hopes to coordinate with local school children for a pen pal style program to get those mailboxes used. She calls the floor design of the activity center the Arbor Rose Advantage. Not many places have this kind of setup. It's an advantage because it keeps their minds active. It keeps their memories going, and ongoing activities just make them happy, she said. And that's the end of my reading for part one of the News Gazette. From the dates of Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, August 10th through the 12th. Thank you. This is Chris Whippo.